Live from Nicoll Hall, Loma Linda University School of Public Health, this is Don't Fear the Career. We hope this podcast will help bring you critical information on career development and tips and best writing practices as a graduate student. We also hope to give you a few laughs. Whatever platform you get this podcast on, please remember to give us a thumbs up, 5 stars, and comment. So now just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, this is Don't Fear the Career, the podcast where we teach you not to fear resumes, cover letters, that talk with your boss, and some writing tips, because Lord knows you're going to need them when you get a career.
You bet.
So today we are talking about one of the most feared aspects of writing as a grad student and also as a professional, and that is plagiarism.
Should I say? Oh, plagiarism! I like it. Keep going.
Oh. Plagiarism is something that sends grad students quaking in their boots. It's something that we're told very early on that is so important, but I guarantee you so many of us don't know how to do it. So we're going to be talking today about what it is, how to avoid it, and really what the components of academic integrity and intellectual property are. In addition, we'll be going over Molly's knowledge nuggets, as well as our book of the week. So let's get it started.
Okay.
We have the lady of the hour, the proprietor of the SPH Writing Center, and our main talent, Miss Molly Doherty.
Yay, Molly Doherty, yay!
And I'm your co-host and producer, Danny Montoya, recent graduate of Loma Linda University.
That's right, she's an alumni. She's a fully vested alumni.
Yeah, I don't even know.
Or something.
I did get my diploma.
Did you get your diploma? So did you get it?
I did, and so I feel very official.
Man, you're awesome. You're like the real deal.
I feel like the real deal. So let's get down to the real deal here.
Okay.
So let's start with our knowledge nugget, and we can kind of ease our way into the murky abyss that is plagiarism. So today's knowledge nugget is having to do with word strings. And Molly can definitely tell you about what those are.
Okay. All right. So word strings as they relate to plagiarism is a phrase, a sequential phrase. So say I wrote, I'm looking at some notes that I wrote earlier. When don't you need to cite a source? These were some notes that I was writing for myself in preparation for this podcast today. And if you were to paraphrase me and you were to use the whole thing, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that's 6, 7, 8. If you were to use the whole thing, that's 8 words, and that would be plagiarism. However, if you paraphrased and turned things around, if you were to paraphrase it really quick, you could do something like, tell me how you cite a source, or what is the best time to cite a source, or whatever. You would end up with a word string if you used cite a source. If you kept that, that's 3 words. That's kind of safe. You're safe there. But anything more than that, then you're lifting an entire phrase, and that's really not what you want. And even though this might not make a whole lot of sense at this point because we haven't really gotten down into plagiarism yet, it will by the end of this episode.
Wow. Okay, then.
I remember
that. So if you're looking at, you know, trying to find a, I know there's not a lot of hard and fast rules when it comes to grammar. I know it sounds horrible when it comes to grammar and writing and when it comes to everything like that. But a general rule of thumb, if you're looking at something that is a phrase of 3 to 5 words or more, you're going to be looking at a string of words that will get you in trouble. So just keep that in mind.
Yep.
So let's get into it. Plagiarism. What is it? How can you avoid it? And tell us a little bit more about what academic integrity and intellectual property and all that stuff. It sounds very confusing.
Part of the reason maybe that people get scared about this is that it turns into this oversized, big ball of, you know, yarn, and it sounds really complicated and stuff. And really, plagiarism at its basic level is simply using the work of someone else and presenting it as your own. And you're doing that by not saying that you wrote it. So say D Danielle wrote something great, and I thought it was so great, and it had to do with another paper that I was writing, and I just sort of pick up Danielle's stuff and work it into my paper and don't ever say Danielle wrote it. Now, it would be completely fine for me to take Danielle's stuff and repurpose it or rephrase it or even directly quote it as long as I say Danielle wrote this. And preferably I do this in an APA format because that's what we do here at LLU. So I would say, I put in parentheses, Montoya, comma, 2018. And that would say that Danielle Montoya, and then I would take that little Montoya 2018 and put that at the list, the end of my reference list, saying, so people want to know precisely what she said and where I can find it. And even if it's just an assignment that she did, I can speak to that in an APA format, that it was an assignment that she did and I saw it and I used it. And so that is, as long as I'm giving someone credit, I'm not plagiarizing. Huh. That's a slightly broad point of view, because there are other things that you can do in which you're sort of partially citing and you're still violating academic integrity, which where I'm going to get into that. And all academic integrity is, it's people sometimes prefer that term to talking about plagiarism because it's part of a larger whole, and it's a positive thing. It's like, it's conducting yourself with integrity. It's regarding the work of your colleagues or authors, people that you don't even know, with respect and using their work and giving them credit for it in a respectful way. And it has to do, and academic integrity is also sort of an umbrella term for things like, you know, testing, you know, using, you know, being ethical in your testing strategy so that you're not like bringing in notes, or you're not trying to get over on people, you're not trying to game the system in any way. You're comporting yourself with integrity in the academic or professional setting. And so plagiarism was one part of that, and it's probably the thing that people most often think about when they talk about academic integrity. And it certainly is the biggest problem, because it just is a big problem, period. I mean, you see it everywhere. But in a general, all plagiarism is just not giving people credit for the work that they've done. And for me as a person, I'm all about authenticity. You know, I cannot claim for myself something that I haven't written. Maybe it's my training in newspapers, which was my first job I ever had. And in that business, there is no lower form of human life than people who steal from other people and don't give them credit. So wow. I have kind of a horror of it. Oh, it's a big deal. It's a really big deal. So I have a horror of it that might not be, it's a little outsized compared to other industries or whatever, other fields, but it's really serious. And in academia in particular, I mean, people spend years of their lives, you know, on research and writing papers and collecting data. And it's incredibly time consuming and incredibly, you know, just difficult work, and something that you don't take on lightly. And in the case of, you know, say a newspaper reporter, well, they wrote a story and they're going to write another one tomorrow. Okay. And they're going to write one the day after that. And so it's not like their entire being is caught up in it, and yet they take it very seriously. So I would think, and it's true that in academia, people take it very seriously and rightly so, because it represents just your intellectual power, your brain output. And it's, you know, not to get too metaphysical, but it's really kind of representing in some ways like who you are as a person somewhat, because it's the workings of your mind. And what's more intrinsic to yourself than that, you know? So I mean, to take someone's intellectual property, as we circle around to that, without giving them credit, that has more of a legal meaning, is my understanding. And I know that there's some countries in the world where, you know, they just, they steal people's stuff, and they'll do things like, oh, I'm going to make a Gucci purse that isn't really Gucci, or I'm going to take somebody's scholarship, somebody's academic work they've written, and I'm going to steal it and put my name on it and pass it off as my own. And I'm not an expert on intellectual property by any means. It really, to me, is more of a legal definition. But again, it just goes to, are you comporting yourself ethically? Are you behaving ethically in the marketplace of ideas? And if you're not, then you got to look at that. But it's more than just, oh, gee, you should try and do better. It's more like, oh, gee, if the person who really wrote that finds out that you used it without giving her credit, she could sue you. So there's that. Or failing that, if it, maybe if it's not legally actionable, and again, I'm not a lawyer, so I couldn't tell you when and how it is legally actionable, but if it was not legally actionable, she could very well report you to whatever governing body or your employer or whatever in your field, and then that leads to the loss of your reputation and maybe your employment, and maybe kind of, you know, put you in a real jam. And why? All you had to do was say that you got some of these ideas from this person. You know, it's not discounting your own work, but it's saying, you know, they thought of it first, and maybe I used it as a basis upon which to do my own work, and that leads me into the idea. And you guys might have heard of this. I think this was ascribed to Isaac Newton, but supposedly he got it from a monk in the 12th century whose name I'm not even going to begin to try to pronounce correctly. And it's a saying, and he says, if I have seen further, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants. In other words,
I love that.
Isn't that great? It's really poetic. And the funny thing is, it's always ascribed to Isaac Newton, and then come to find out, it was attributed to him probably falsely. So it's not really plagiarism, because I don't think that he was walking around telling everybody he said it first. He might very well have said, this was Bernard of Chartres. Okay, I just said it. Bernard of Chartres in the 12th century. Maybe he did, but that part got cut off, and everybody's walking around saying, hey, you know, Isaac, he has this great saying, if I've seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants.
That's a bit ironic, if you don't.
It's a little ironic, which I thought was hilarious. You know, the first time I had to teach this, and so I remember I was talking about it in class, like, look at it. We kind of think that maybe he plagiarized, but he didn't really, but it was sort of ascribed to him erroneously. And then thus legends are born. But the basic, the thrust of the saying is that no one gets anywhere on their own. Okay. That's basically what it means. So say somebody does some great work in the field of neurology, whatever, and it's this groundbreaking work or whatever, and you read this, you're a neurologist, and you're so interested in this, and it motivates you to undertake your own research that is maybe related somewhat to this paper you've just read, and so you're thinking, hey, I can maybe build upon this. I want to explore this one area that he hasn't really touched on. Let me see if I can do that. But boy, this is so interesting. And I'm using his work really as a basis for beginning my own. He is the giant, and you're standing on his shoulders. Okay. His work influenced you and your desire to do your own work. And you will do some work and at some point somebody else may very well be motivated or inspired by, and then they will go forward. And that's basically the history of the human race, is that we're always doing things that inspire or excite or energize other people around us. And it might, you know, get them off into a whole different field, even than what you were initially thinking. It doesn't matter. But, and also it was to circle back around, is that it's all right to use their work. They are happy for you to use their work. It's an honor for them to use your work, but you want them to give you credit for having done the work. So if I'm the neurologist, what now?
I said credit where credit is due.
Absolutely, yes. And so if I'm the neurologist, I'm going to say, you know, I was reading this in my paper that I'm writing. I was inspired by the work of Dr. So-and-so, who discussed this one aspect of neurological whatever. And I decided to undertake one aspect of it, and that informed my own work. And so you're going to put his name in there, Mr. Dr. Neurologist 2018, and then you're going to put him in your reference list, and then everybody's going to know that that you used his work as a basis, as a background, as kind of a starting point for your own work, and you're going to move forward from that, and you've done everything right. You've honored him. You've done the right thing. You've shown yourself to be a person of integrity, and you're well on your way to a nice career. That's kind of how that works.
I have a question, Molly.
Sure.
You're talking about taking work from other people, but what about if I want to quote, like, do I have to ever like quote myself, be like, as Danielle Montoya said in 2016?
Yeah, you really, you actually, well, you do.
You do. I really? But I'm the one who said it. It's my mind. It's my work. Right.
It's true. And the thing is, it depends. Like, if it's something that's original to that moment, say you're writing your dissertation. Okay, this is an example I can attest to. I've read about 130 of them, so edited them more precisely. And so it's like, so that original work that doctoral student is writing, she doesn't have to, you know, quote herself throughout, because obviously this is an original work. However, if she had written a work previous to this, which she is citing, she needs to say that that's hers. So you say, like, in 2018, you know, the PI, some people refer to themselves in the third person, the researcher, or some people use, you know, pronouns. It really just depends on the field and what the standards are. I wrote this article, da, 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 and it was about this, and I found this. And I'm using that as a basis. I mean, of course, you're going to write this much differently, but essentially you are hearkening back to your own work. Now, in the context of grad school, though, this is important. I didn't know this was a thing. Frankly, I did not know self-plagiarism is a thing. Until I came here, I thought, man, I am the biggest self-plagiarist in the world, because I'm constantly, you know, cutting and pasting out of things I've written. And it's weird, but in the context of grad school, and it depends on the instructor, but 99% of the instructors that I've spoken to, not that I've done a survey, but pretty much I've only met one instructor at Loma Linda who is okay with students recycling work that they have submitted to other classes.
Yeah, I've never seen that be okay.
Yeah, I only know one person, and she's a little anachronistic anyway. You know what I mean? She's a maverick. She's a free thinker, and she's like, "Hey, they already did the work. I don't care as long as they get it." I'm like, "Oh, that's you know, singular. Okay, no one else says that." But in general,
I've never seen someone be described as singular.
No, it's not that. Singular. Okay. I've been doing a lot of, like, I've been reading a lot of Jane Austen lately, and that's one of the expressions they use. And so I'm just one of these people. It's like, I pick up, like, the day I was reading all the Jane Austen and stuff I was emailing to, all my emails sounded like Jane Austen. It was really crazy. Anyway, people are like, "What's wrong with you? You're sounding really strange." Like, "I'm sorry, I'm listening to Jane Austen." Anyway. So all that to say, most 99% of every instructor I've ever spoken to about this says, "Oh my God, no, they can't take a piece from another class and reuse it in my class unless," and this is a big unless, "you tell them first, hey, Dr. So-and-so, I know you gave me this assignment, but there's an aspect of it that I'm working on in this other class, and I've written some good stuff. Would it be okay if I use some of it? I'm not going to pick up the whole paper, but if I use some pieces of it in here, and if I delineate which ones they are, just so you can see like the percentage it's contributing, you know, to the overall piece, would that be okay?" And if the professor says yes, then you're good to go. And if not, then you start from scratch.
Okay. Then.
Yeah, I mean, and that's basically it. So, but I mean, some of them might be okay. It's when you're recycling and regurgitating things of your own and not telling them. That's when things get a little dicey. So it's always just better just be honest.
I've also read a lot of articles in the public health sphere, just in science in general, in which people are quoting previous research that they've done. So, for example, they have a new study on.
Exactly.
For example, railroad, asthma and railroads, you know, like proximity to railroads causes asthma in children. And they might quote a study that they did in like 2004 as the basis of it. Yes. So I guess that is an example of using it in academia, but also in your career later on.
Mm-hmm. So, well, another thing is you can also be expected to, now, things don't have to be too, things don't have to have been published in order for you to cite them. So even if it's just a personal conversation, there's a thing in APA where you can put in parentheses, "personal conversation, no date, ND," they'll say ND, and this is in parentheses, and with the name of the person. And that's a citation. So you're saying, you know, you had a conversation with somebody, and that's also a way of citing.
That's so really interesting, because a lot of the time I've had some great conversations with people that have like sparked my mind and sparked some things that I have thought about.
Well, yeah, but let's not go crazy because conversations can excite your brain in all kinds of ways and fire off all these synapses. And before you know it, you're just like, your whole head's lit up like a Christmas tree and things are great, right? But it has to be something like a fact that relates directly to the work that you're doing. You know
okay.
what I mean?
Okay.
So,
okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, but you bring up an interesting point, because this could relate to conversations, but it can also relate to background information that you've read. Anybody who's ever done a lit review knows that you end up reading a lot of stuff that you might not, you know, like maybe 80% of what you're not keeping, you're not citing, you know, directly in your text. You're not using it in a focused way. Your text. However, you've read it and it has kind of formed a basis for your knowledge on the subject, right?
Of course. So
even though they're not things that you are using in a focused way, you are specifying, I use this particular thing from this particular author. If you felt like you were enriched or it gave you a background, it increased your understanding of the topic, you would include them in your references.
So would I include that in a particular, like, let's just say there is a paragraph in my intro talking about the background of the Desert Highland Gateway community. And I read a couple articles that gave me, you know, like background, blah, 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 and just, I don't know, something about, you know, building communities.
Unless you're using them specifically, unless you're using a particular phrase that you want to paraphrase, unless you're citing a particular, I mean, if it's just sort of gone to your overall understanding and knowledge of the subject, and it's formed kind of a foundation of your knowledge, mm-hmm. you would go ahead and just put that in the reference list.
Okay. So don't cite it for, you know, the...
Unless it's specific, unless you say in their, you know, 2018 report on the Desert Highland Gateway community, so-and-so, this group of students, you can do that. There's ways of doing that too on APA. So, so if you're using something that's precisely, I mean, it starts getting into kind of a murky area, but I think people, as long as you're putting them in there in some way,
okay.
You know, say it's just kind of like background, but you're definitely putting them in your references and you're saying, look, I drew upon this. So,
okay. Anyway. So what about those students that like, that just don't know, like, is it a crime that is, well, obviously it's not a crime that's victimless, right? But is it a, you know, is plagiarism something that you can really fault someone if they don't know about it or?
Yeah. I mean, no. I mean, sorry, take that back. No, I think if you truly do not know, I think you can be forgiven once.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And the thing is, and I've had this happen where people have done things where they thought they were citing correctly and they did about half of what they were supposed to do because of the form that the citation took. So they kind of thought they almost did it right, but they didn't do it exactly right. And so that was truly in this one instance, and I'm thinking of this was like 3 years ago. And these two students, both of them used different citations in some papers they were writing independently of each other. And they weren't the same things. It's just two students. They both had kind of higher than average Turnitin scores. And the instructor was a little perturbed by what she saw. It was higher than what she was used to seeing, especially from these students. And so she thought maybe there had been some plagiarism afoot. So she sends them to me. And I look at it and I'm realizing they had put in each of the cases, the student had cited the work, but they had also quoted completely word for word. And this goes to what we talked about in the knowledge nugget about word strings. Instead of paraphrasing that particular passage, putting it into their own words, they had picked it up, cut and pasted, dropped it right in. And then they put the name of the author next to it. And they thought, hey, this is a good job of work. I just did the right thing, right? No, if you're going to use something that is more than 3 to 5 words, if it's like a string, an entire like a sentence or 2 or 3 sentences or a block of text or whatever, you're going to put quotes.
Okay.
You're going to be, that's a verbatim quote. Now, before we don't, let's stick a pin in that because I don't want to wander too far off of that because we need to circle back to it. But in that case, they did not know. They're like, oh, but Molly, I cited. And I'm like, yes, honey, you did. But you either have to put quoties, as I call them, because, you know, I was an English major, quoties around you know, the phrase to show that it's a direct verbatim lift, as I call it also, of somebody else's work, to be very precise about that particular phrase, or, and also cite them. Okay. So you have to do both. And they did not know that. They're like, oh, I thought just as long as I put the author's name and the year and everything, I was cool. So in that case, it was just a misunderstanding and they never did it again. And they both had been very, you know, very scrupulous, very, very ethical students. And so it was just a misunderstanding. And that's the kind of thing that can easily be rectified. And it was. Okay. However, there is a thing in which we are intentionally doing things now. And this, okay, this goes into another area too. Some people are just straight up thieves. Okay. I mean, they're not nice. They're buying papers on the internet. They're ripping off their fellow students. They're, hey, can I look at your paper? And then they pick up the whole thing. Okay.
I've been on the back end of that, and it's a terrifying thing. And it's not, it wasn't in grad school. It was in undergrad. And it was the most terrifying thing I've ever experienced, because it was drilled home that even if someone steals from you, like sometimes you can get in trouble.
Yeah.
It was, and it terrified me, because this guy had plagiarized, I think, like 4 or 5 of us just by asking us, like, hey, did you do this paper? I'm having a really hard time with it. Can you send me yours?
Yeah. And he picked up nice little chunks of paper.
Yeah. And took 4 or 5 of us and took chunks of it and then had turned it in as his own. But luckily the teacher saw what he had done. And
yeah, and in that case, you were not to be blamed, because you did not agree to give him this. He took it upon himself to steal from you. But some people will share papers out with each other, and with the understanding that they're, everybody's just going to sort of take from it like it's a big old pot of soup at a potluck or something. And that is that is not what it is. Okay. And so that's when everybody's busted. Or here's another example, and this goes to academic integrity, as the earlier example did as well, where you, like, you take a test and, you know, maybe this instructor doesn't write their tests every year. Like, they have a couple good tests that they like to keep and they regurgitate, and they're like, hey, I took that class last year. I bet I still have my test.
Oh.
And then I do. And then that is full on. That is not plagiarism. That's academic integrity theft. And that's where everybody's busted. So the person who lent the test is busted. The person who took the test and used that material is busted. Everybody's busted. Everybody's getting wished out into the cornfield because they did it bad. And so there's that. But there's also, in addition to the intentional stuff that we all hear about, stealing papers and looking on other people's papers and, you know, sharing out your work like it's a pot of soup at a potluck or whatever, there's also, sometimes there's real cultural differences that we have in the United States versus other parts of the world. As we know, the U.S., we're a very individualistic society, for good or for ill, and we like individual effort, and even though we walk around saying things like, you know, if I've seen further than others, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants, we also very much value people doing their own work, you know, and even if they're using other people's sources, and that's great, it's like, well, what are you doing though? What are you doing? And other parts of the world that are more collectivistic, places like China, places like Japan, I think Japan is somewhat a bit like this. And I think India and other parts of the world as well. For all I know, there are quite a few more than that, but those are some examples that spring to mind. People not only don't mind doing it, they consider it like a form of like honor. It's like, you know, I flattery, or, you know, like, you know, I so value my teacher. I'm using some of their work in my own, and it's showing that I have such respect for my teacher or from this author or whatever. And so it's not seen as theft. It's seen as, you know, you are doing something that is culturally very okay. And it's, everyone kind of contributes, and you're showing your appreciation for the work of somebody else. And it's not seen that way. However, in the U.S., we don't see it that way. And so for people who are coming from other parts of the world, I understand that your traditions are different. And when you go back home, assuming you do, if you choose to live and work in the United States and do scholarship here, then you're going to have to follow the cultural mores of the society. But if you go back home, you know, you're going to get, you know, back into your own way of doing things and understanding it the way you used to do. But while you're here, it's really important that you follow along with kind of like the stream. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. So
exactly. So learn to play the game here. And that's, you know, this is how
And really, it's so easy. The thing is, all you have to do is just give the name of the person. I mean, it's not quite as easy as that, okay, because you still have to paraphrase it.
You make it sound so easy.
Well, you know, I mean, you still have to take the time to paraphrase it, and that we're going to get into that in another show, because that's a skill. And when you paraphrase correctly, when you get kind of used to paraphrasing, and you, it's almost like a muscle. I always say it's kind of like a muscle where that you, the more you flex it, the more you exercise it, the better you get at it. So once you're learning how to paraphrase efficiently and accurately, then you don't have to worry as much about plagiarism. You know, it's not so much of a problem because you feel you're confident in your ability to take other people's ideas and recast them in your own words and then still give the author the credit, because I've seen the opposite of, you know, the two students I told you that example. There's also the example of, if I paraphrase it, then I don't have to give them credit anymore. I've seen that too. It's like, no, you have to paraphrase and still give them credit because you're taking their ideas. It's no longer precisely their words, but it's their ideas. And so you're putting
their intellectual property.
Exactly. Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm not really comfortable with that because I think that still kind of has more of a legalistic kind of framing that I'm
or
not
their thoughts.
Their thoughts, their work, their scholarship, their, you know, it's just, it's their work and you just don't do it. And so, so people think that, oh yeah, I went ahead and I changed everything all around and now it's mine. It's like, no, it's somebody else's idea. And then you're going to put their name on it, but you still have to go to the trouble of paraphrasing. Now, I want to get
just quote everything.
No, you just can't quote anything, everything. And I'm going to tell you, I'm so glad you went there because that's a really good segue, because I get wiggy about the whole quotey thing. Okay. People do this and I know why you do it. I totally get why you do it. Like, no worries. I mean, there's worries. Okay. That's an expression. But the problem is that people do it because they're afraid of unintentionally plagiarizing, or they don't believe in their own ability to paraphrase. I had one student tell me, you know, she was sort of frantic. She said, but Molly, they took all the good words. The original author had taken all the good words. They were leaving her with not very good ones. And I'm like, well, okay, that might very well be true. I kind of don't agree because there's a lot of really not so, you know, fabulous academic writers out there. But somebody might very well have taken all the ones, especially, okay, say if you have to paraphrase Shakespeare as a for instance. Yes, clearly he took all the good words. He took them all, baby. Okay. He took all the good words. But you can still paraphrase him. It's not going to be as thrilling, and people are not going to put it on a t-shirt or not going to, you know, walk across a stage, you know, using your words instead of Shakespeare's, but you're going to get the idea across, and that's what's important. So you're not necessarily trying to be a great artiste or anything. You're just trying to, you know, accurately and faithfully represent their ideas. And so that's your point of it. And the reason I talk a lot, to me, this is all about, it's very organic to me. It's like, if you, for especially for people who are non-native speakers of English, other people, but American students do it as well, native English speakers do it as well. If you are not a big reader, and say your vocabulary is not as big as you would like it to be, or say you're a non-native speaker of English and your vocabulary is definitely not as big as you would like it to be, and you start getting worried, it's like, I don't know that I have enough tools in my word toolkit, which is your, you know, your vocabulary, your lexicon, to really faithfully and accurately paraphrase this individual. So I'm just going to do the thing that I know will keep me from getting in trouble. I'm going to pick up the whole three or four sentences and I'm going to just put quotes around it and put a cite right next to it, cite their name, and I'm good to go. And technically, yes, you are breaking no rules by doing that. However, and you know, there's always a however. However, what you're doing is you are essentially making a patchwork of a whole bunch of other people's work. It's like a quilt. You're making like a quilt of other people's writing and then putting their names on it and then saying, this is what I found out. And what you want to, I mean, in addition to paraphrasing, you have to do, okay, you also don't want to ever do things, and please don't let me catch you doing this, you guys, quoting things like facts, like, oh, say you're citing something, a paper, and you want to say, oh, in the let me get an example. In the region of oh God, I just can't think of anything. In the region of the southeast of the United States, average rainfall is that kind of thing. Just like a fact, right?
You don't have to.
I've seen people. You don't quote that. You paraphrase that and you do the best you can. And you might end up with 3 to 5 words that are in a string, and you're just going to do the very best you can because, you know, there's only so much you can do with something like that. However, that is not something that you quote. And what you quote, and this is really important, you quote key phrases. Okay. And a key phrase, let me give you a good example. This is an old example, and this is way before everybody's time, including mine. But if anybody remembers, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a president we had, like,
oh my gosh,
over 100 years.
This is really.
And he said, he got up. Yeah, well, hang in with me. Okay. So he used to get up and he would do like these radio chats and stuff. And much, he's kind of like pre-podcast. Okay. He was like a podcaster of his day. All right. Let's look at it that way. Anyway, so he would get up and he would do these fireside chats to make everybody feel good. You know, because people were scared. It was a big, great depression. Everybody's terrified and they're hungry and living on soup kitchens and it's a bad time. So he would have these nice little chats once a week on the radio and tell people nice things. And one of the things he said, I actually think he said this in his speech, but he said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself.
I know that quote.
There you go. That's a key phrase. So you're not going to paraphrase that. You're going to put quotes around it. And you're going to say, as President Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. You're going to put quotes around it. And so by using his name, you just cited him. You want to be more precise. And so you could say, as President Franklin Delano Roosevelt said in 1932, or whenever in fact he said it, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. That's a complete citation right there. You just did. You don't have to put it in parentheses. It doesn't have to be like that. Just using the name, even in regular text, is still considered a citation. But that's an example of a key phrase. But if Franklin Delano Roosevelt then went ahead and said, the average rainfall in the southeast, you know, portion of the United States is, you're going to be like, President Roosevelt, for no particular reason, started talking about the rainfall in Alabama, you know, you're not going to like quote him because that's not special, unique phrase, right? That's okay. Just fact. So that's an important thing. So
what about, go ahead.
Now you go ahead.
Okay. So we got words, but what about someone's graph? Like if I really like what they're trying to show here and I want that visual representation where they have a table that's really cool. Mm-hmm. Like, what about that?
Oh, there's nothing wrong with stealing other people's work unless you don't mind being a terrible person. You know, so, hey, if you have zero conscience, I'd say
no,
go right.
No. I'm saying no, how. No,
it's not. You just, again, and this is so much easier. God, if it's a graph or a table or something, you don't have to paraphrase that. You just put their name on it. It's so good. There's very little work to do.
Okay.
So anything. You know, so here's, I have kind of like a little laundry list of things to cite. Okay. Words that you quote, words that you summarize, words that you paraphrase, you have to, even if you rewrote it, if it's somebody else's idea, remember, you got to put their name on it.
You're going to put quotes?
You don't have, you're not going to put quotes on a paraphrase because you wrote that.
Okay.
If you quote, we have nothing to fear but fear itself, you're going to put quotes on that.
Okay.
Right? Okay, but, and then words you summarize, you're not going to put quotes on that because you're going to all that trouble summarizing, and that's a little different from paraphrasing, and that's a whole other discussion we're going to have one other day. But anyway, or ideas, and ideas goes to what we talked about with the background, okay? So if you're going to read somebody's idea, and maybe you don't really directly use it in your piece that you're writing, but you know that in a form, some of your thinking, you're going to put it in your reference list. And so that's another way of citing. Photographs, obviously, tables of information, surveys, key phrases, all kinds of things like that. Those are things that you're always going to show. And if you're going to do a key phrase, then if you're going to go down the APA rabbit hole, you're also going to put like the page on which it appeared if it appeared. But we're going to do APA another day. So no worries, no heavy sides. Everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine, I promise.
Okay, all right. Okay? This is the don't fear part of don't fear the career.
Yes. So are we going to talk about the expression of common knowledge?
What?
The expression of common knowledge.
What do you mean?
Well, let me tell you. Okay, let me tell you. Okay, there's a thing, and this can get scary, but there's certain things that we know in the world that are facts, right? That
like don't belong hydrogen, to anything, like hydrogen. Like water is made out of to hydrogen and one oxygen.
Well, see, I didn't really know that, but no, I'm just kidding. I think I did.
H2O?
Oh, yeah, I get it. Okay, two hydrogen atoms, right?
Yeah.
Hydrogen, okay, or something. Anyway, I was an English major. Sorry. So, okay, so this is the thing. So my example I always give is the war between the states took place between 1861 and 1865.
I can't tell you the years. Are you kidding me?
Oh, well, whatever. You could, but you probably know it's over in 1865, right?
I think, I thought it was like in the 1840s or something.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my God. I'm so afraid now. I'm afraid for all of America. But anyway, I'm just kidding. Okay, so no. So the war between the states was between 1861 and 1865. You don't have to cite that. You know why?
Why?
Because that's in the common knowledge of the world, other than you. Okay, you didn't have that knowledge. But other people have that knowledge, and it's just sort of accepted fact. It just is. If you put water on dirt, it turns into mud. Okay. That's an accepted, knowledgeable thing. We don't have to say, well, according to so-and-so, if you put water on dirt, it turns into mud. No, you're not doing that. But if you then say, in his book on the Civil War, which ran between 1861 and 1865, are you writing this down, Danielle? Then you are, you know, this author wrote about such and such, and then goes off on this whole big old tangent, right, about the Civil War. So that's when you're citing that person, but you don't have to cite, oh, well, the, you know, the war between the states, or World War II, or, you know, the 2016 election, or anything like that. I mean, it just is. But if you're going to start talking about other people's impressions of those things that are in the common knowledge world, that's when you're going to start citing. So, you know, like we all know, President Trump was elected in 2016. That's common knowledge. It's out in there in the world, and there's nothing we can do about it. Okay. So there's that. But if somebody was to write about something, because Lord knows nobody's written anything about that. So say you're gonna quote a particular author who's written a book or an article or something, that's when you're gonna start citing. So you don't have to cite, oh, hey, according to the US election, you know, body, he was elected. No, that's news. But if we're going to write about anybody who wrote about that, that's when you're going to get into your paraphrasing or your summarizing or your quoting or whatever. Okay. Does that make sense? I can do better. I can try harder to explain.
No, it does make sense. It does. It's just there've been instances where I feel like you don't know what's common knowledge and what isn't. For example, nutritionists would be like, everyone knows that sodium is bad for you.
No. See, that's an intellectual kind of an idea. Okay. But I remember this. Hey, can you scroll for me on my little thing here? Because one of the things, this was a thing. I mean, I had an example.
This one?
Long passages. Yeah. Back up. Long passages about common knowledge right there. Say, must still be cited because now, and this could even be on Wikipedia as crazy as it is. Okay. So this is, here are my exceptions. The work of another, which builds upon common knowledge, must be cited, which I just explained. So say, and in the example of what you said, a nutritionist said about sugar, whatever, I'm going to use nicotine. It's common knowledge that nicotine is an addictive substance. But a scientist's research about the mechanism of nicotine addiction must be cited.
So we can say that nicotine is addictive.
Yes, because that is settled science. Okay. That's out there in the world. No one person came to that conclusion. And if they did, they might very well have, but it might have been 150 years ago. Who knows? It's lost to the passages of time, mostly. But anything else above that, like somebody's going to say, well, you know, I'm going to write and explain to you, Molly, all about the mechanism of action in nicotine addiction. That is his scholarship. And that is when I'm going to cite it.
Okay.
Now, this is the thing. Now, opinions are another thing, okay? Opinions about common knowledge must be cited. So, the example that I'm giving, NASA's space shuttle program cost a lot of money. This is common knowledge, right? It cost X number of millions of dollars. Well, actually, no, that would be a citation. That's be a citable fact. So just say it's expensive, you know, general knowledge. But George Wilson, this random guy who wrote an op-ed, says that the space shuttle program was wasteful.
Okay.
So you're going to cite his opinion, however ridiculous it might be, whether you agree with it or not.
Okay.
And that's the thing. That's a whole other issue.
Okay. So opinion. So like the sky is blue. That's a fact.
That's a fact.
But the sky is blue because aliens are coming to get us. That's an opinion or
yes, that's a good example. Or the sky should be blue, but it has been polluted by the terrible policies of this government or that corporation or whatever, and then you're getting into like a rant, okay? And that's opinion, right?
Okay.
Now, the thing is, I have seen people, this is about long passages about common knowledge. This would be like Wikipedia even. So people, I have cited Wikipedia because if you're taking a chunk from Wikipedia, you don't want to pass it off as your own work unless you're Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul from the state of Kentucky. No, it's true. No, this is not a political thing. It actually was found, and I don't think he did it. Somebody on his staff did it. And they were confused, as you clearly are, and which can be confusing also about Wikipedia. I understand this. And so they thought, well, hey, it's out there in the world. It's you know, common knowledge or whatever. But not really. Somebody wrote something, and you can just still, you might not know precisely who wrote it, but you can say that you got it from Wikipedia and the date that you got it. Okay. Also, another one. Oh God, I had another one, and it was really good too. The thing about Wikipedia. People also think that because something's on the internet, it's not copyrighted, it's not protected. You can use it, you can do whatever you want to with it because it's out there on the internet, and boy, are you ever wrong. Okay. And so again, if you cannot just use people's words that they put on the internet, some things are, this is starting to get into intellectual property and I start getting scared, but public domain kind of stuff. Yeah, public domain. So certain things are in the public domain. So say like, okay, my Jane Austen books that I was listening to over Spotify or Podbean or wherever, and that was all in the public domain. Those are books that are in the public domain and they were read aloud. But does it mean that they can be used without citing? No, Jane Austen wrote those books.
Okay.
So even if it's in the public domain, you still need to cite. Encyclopedias are filled with common knowledge. They still need to be cited.
Dave.
Yes. When I completely paraphrase somebody else's ideas, I still need to cite them.
Okay. Okay.
So I know it starts getting a little dicey and... It's true. I mean, for the most part, it's pretty simple. I mean, scroll through some more for me. Let me look some more at my fabulous slides I made a while back. It was something about basically, yeah. So this is the golden test that I call it anyway. Is my reader likely to think this information originated with me when it did not? If the answer to that is yes, then you need to cite it. Because as I say, or this guy, Robert Harris, who I do not want to plagiarize for obvious reasons, wrote, and we're going to talk about him in our book of the week, you know, better to err on the side of caution and credit the original author rather than risk being accused of plagiarism.
Okay.
So if you didn't write it, then you better cite it. That's what Molly says. Yay! See?
That should have been a knowledge nugget.
That's a knowledge nugget. Oh God, that should have been the knowledge nugget. Well, then you're going to get two knowledge nuggets. You're going to get two. You're going to get the one about the word strings, and then you're going to get, if you didn't write it, then you cite it. So it's like it's a bonus.
For the price of one.
It is, especially since this cost you nothing. It was like... Even better. It's like just a bonus that you didn't have to pay for. It's awesome.
Okay.
So let's see. And then also, and this is the thing, kind of what we were talking about, academic integrity. Ultimately, plagiarism is about ethical conduct, not legality. So don't be looking to split any legal hairs. Well, I didn't know about the copyright, or I don't think that's whatever. No, it's like you're not looking to get around the rules. Why not just give the person credit? Wouldn't you want the credit for your own work? Jane Austen, she's been dead for 200 years, okay? But I'm sure wherever she is, actually longer than that, but she would want people to say, hey, yeah, you know, I wrote that book and I worked really hard on that. So please give me the credit for having written it. I know that I had this happen to me once actually, where something that I'd written for the university, not under my own name, it was like a press release or something, it got picked up and ascribed to somebody who had never written it, and not here at school, this was someplace else, and I got really upset, and I was like, well, this should have, I remember speaking to the person who had taken it, and I said, you know, well, do you want your name on it? I'm like, no, I did this on behalf of Loma Linda, and so it should have Loma Linda's name on it. You know what I mean?
Wow.
But this guy, he had not written it, and apparently all kinds. So she was sort of, this woman was sort of using him as like a straw author or something. And that is just about the wrongest thing in Wrongonia, okay?
But, as someone who's very into.
Yeah. And so I'm just like, whoa, man, that is just so messed up. If I have to explain to you why that's messed up, then apparently I should not be having this conversation with you because you're never going to agree. So I'm just going to let it go. I'm letting it go, baby, because you're not ever going to get it. But our students, I know they're going to get it, and they want to do the right thing, and they are good, ethical, moral people, and they care about authenticity and doing their own work and not ripping other people off.
I feel like that is a wonderful place to stop this particular recording on plagiarism, because next week, or our next episode to be precise, we will be talking about paraphrasing, quoting, and summarizing.
Yes, we will.
And that's, it's terrifying. It's terrifying.
It is, but you know, I don't know. See, it's easy for me because I've had to do it for so long because I was in the newspapers. And so basically everything in newspaper land is paraphrasing other people's ideas. You're always paraphrasing. It's like I do it without thinking sometimes. I mean, it's just like it's like my brain turns into like all the words turn into like little puzzle pieces and they just start rearranging themselves in my head. It's weird. But the reason, okay, but there's a little announcement that I want to make here because in addition to this podcast, as part of this podcast, there is going to be a quiz
with
Loma Linda University School of Public Health students. And it will
be beyond.
And those beyond, but this is for specifically for, because again, remember you said about, well, if you don't know, then can you be blamed? It's like, you're right. If you don't know, you cannot really be blamed once. And so this podcast and the video that I also have that I've done and this quiz that everyone will be taking, is going to think of it as a vaccine, okay, that will inoculate you against the virus of plagiarism.
Oh, how cool. That's a great way to think about it.
Thank you. And so you're going to be like, you'll have like the little titers in your blood or whatever. No, not really. But I mean, you know, you will have like, you know, you will know. And so this podcast and the video and the quiz, and you don't have to watch the video as well because it's covering the same stuff we're talking about here. But the quiz that everyone's going to take and pass is going to provide you with the basis of knowledge that you need to get through the your first quarter of school and just for in life in general. And it's going to be good and it's going to clear a lot of things up for you. And then also, if you ever have questions, you just come see me, send me an email, give me a call, whatever you want. And I can try and clear up whatever little, you know, issues that you have. And if I don't know, then we'll figure it out together.
Okay. That concludes the major portion of this podcast. We're going to tie it up with our book of the week. Can you tell us more about our book of the week, Miss Molly?
The book of the week is great. The book of the week is Using Sources Effectively by Robert A. Harris. And he's a PhD in everything. And he's so awesome. The book that I have is a really old version because I'm cheap, like you wouldn't believe. And so I get all my books secondhand. But there's like a newer version of this with a nice cover and everything. And actually, the whole name of the book is Using Sources Effectively, Strengthening Your Writing and Avoiding Plagiarism. And I love this book so much. I have it just highlighted everywhere. I have little tabbies on it. I have exclamation points next to things. It's an amazing book. And it's not a big, giant, thick book either. And it's very clearly written. And so a lot of the examples that I'm using here and on the video, on my PowerPoint, I am citing extensively Dr. Harris. And I put his name at the bottom of the different slides in which I used his work. So it's a book that I urge you all to get. You can get a secondhand copy for probably $20. I'm pretty sure. And, but there are truly, in addition, a million places on the internet where you can get information about plagiarism.
Okay.
It's a topic that is extensively covered. And so, but it all really kind of goes back to that basic organic thing of if you didn't write it, then you better cite it. And if it's not yours, then don't take credit for it. And that's really what it all comes down to. Of course, there's finer shades of meaning, but not that much, to be honest with you. Not a whole lot else there is to learn about it, but I'm always willing just to help anybody out who has a question and help, you know, settle bets or whatever might be going on, okay?
All right. That has made it a lot less scary, at least for me, and I know that I've had a lot of conversations with you about this, so I was a little less timid about this, but I do feel like this is very clarifying, and hopefully when we go over paraphrasing, it will stymie the fear and terror that you all might have with this subject.
So again, I would like
to thank you for listening. We will be having our show notes include, of course, that wonderful quiz that Molly was talking about, as well as a YouTube, I think it's a YouTube video, right?
It is.
Okay. We'll be having that YouTube video, and I believe maybe a PowerPoint as well.
Well, yeah, the video is based on a PowerPoint. It's not my favorite one I've ever done, you guys. So I'm going to try and like jazz it up a little bit for you. So, you know, because really I was just really just running off from the mouth and it's taking too long. So I'm going to try and like shorten it up a little bit. So I kind of feel like the podcast, we're hitting a lot of what I do in the PowerPoint, but if you want to watch the video, and I can also just put up the PowerPoint slides if you just want to kind of like, you know.
Yeah. If you're a visual learner.
Yeah.
And you want to read this for yourself, we will have this available to you in our show notes. So that'll be in the
description. Which is on the website.
Yeah, you'll find that link to the website through the description for this video. And we'll have all the lovely links and quotes and books that we cite here on that for you. So once again, thank you so much for listening. Please remember to give us a thumbs up, comment, and like, and share this podcast wherever you may be listening. Of course, our main audience is Loma Linda University School of Public Health, but if you stumbled upon this and you absolutely love it, please let us know and send us whatever you're thinking. If there's a particular topic that you dread or you really want us to cover, let us know. And let us know if you have any feedback on this, if this really helped you in your, if you're a student and this really helps you in your first quarter, let us know and let us know what you think about it. And
just tell me how fabulous I am. That's all I want to hear. That's really it. You know, I'm a simple creature. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you later.
Bye.